Do you ever worry that you're not living your best life?
Deep down, you know.
You're more than your failures.
Defined by anyone's expectations.
That inner demon we all share.
Nobody told me it will feel this way.
I know it's advertising, but there is an implicit assumption in a lot of what we see and hear online today that the most important pursuit in life is self-creation.
You don't decide how your story begins.
Even angels will fall.
You do get to decide how it ends.
Optimizing, curating, branding yourself.
That voice that tells you to stop.
You're not defeated.
What you want to be?
Greatness is for all of us.
Because in a crowded marketplace, how else will you be seen?
There's nothing more empowering than choice.
We're all capable of it.
Do you have to limit yourself to be just one thing?
Capable of anything.
But the construction of personal identity has a long history.
You need a miracle.
Persistence.
Live with vitality.
Yes! Your inner goddess.
Kind of like the Greek god of lightning.
Tara Isabella Burton is a writer and social critic with a background in history and theology. And to her mind, our current obsession with personal identity and self-creation actually has deeply religious roots. Her new book, Self-Made, traces its history from Da Vinci to the Kardashians.
You can't follow.
You have to find it.
I am what I am.
The story that I trace is the development of this idea that certain people who are able to create their own destinies or create their own public personae are kind of demigods. Hmm. And this goes from an idea that some people, a few of them, might be selected by God to have this opportunity. They're the exception that proves the rule, to a world in the present day where it's both more democratic and also more of a prison, because everyone is expected to create their own identity and shape their own destiny. And if you don't do that, it means you failed as a human being.
You, over and over again, talk about this underlying belief in our innate kind of divinity. We're supposed to become gods or demigods. Can you explain that a little bit more? Because I don't think that the average person going on social media trying to represent their best self or come up with a personal brand online, I don't think that they actually think that they're trying to become godlike.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. I think this is a story about religion as much as anything else. And this idea of self-making and self-creation is not specific to the US, but it's in the United States, particularly in the second half of the 19th century, that it gets fused with what I often think is one of the most underrated religious movements in world history, and that is the self-help spiritualist movement known as New Thought, which sort of starts out with the faith healing in the 1860s, a mix of pseudoscience and spiritualism. It's this idea that there's this force, this energy, these vibes out there in the universe, and if you focus on what you want hard enough, you can get in touch with this electrical undercurrent of the universe. You can harness it. Towards the end of the 19th century, this starts to be applied not just to health, but to wealth. There becomes a real cottage industry in self-help books, basically proto versions of The Secret or manifesting or contemporary versions of the same thing.
Some of those books are still around and are still, you know, still have cult followings. I'm thinking Think and Grow Rich.
Absolutely. Or
there are others.
The Power of Positive Thinking, Norman Vincent Peale. If you dream it, you can have it. It intensifies this idea that what it means to be human is to create ourselves and that we are the closest thing to gods in the universe. Now, sometimes you get people talking about this very explicitly. I'm always struck when I see like wellness ads on Instagram. Oh, find the goddess within you, your divine power, your divine. Hmm. I think that it's so normal now that we don't think, wow, a few hundred years ago, like this would have been a really, really controversial statement.
Yeah, you could have been burned at the stake for it.
Yeah. But now it's just advertising jargon.
Well, there's also this bedrock of fascist ideology. You draw out this connection between this doctrine of self-creation and self-making and the rise of authoritarian leaders in the early 20th century, like Hitler and Mussolini.
There's two different paths that this idea of the self-maker take in the 19th century that I think are actually more similar than they appear. And one is the one we've been talking about, this American idea of where it's the good news is anyone can get rich. But if you don't, it means it's your fault. In Europe, the idea of the self-creator is a little more fraught. obviously we're working against the backdrop of a hereditary aristocracy in decline. We're working against the idea that just some people have an innate specialness, and it's not money, but it's also not birth. It's the secret third thing, some special, again, godlike quality. And people like Nietzsche take this idea up, and they, again, give it a more explicit theological cast that God is dead. This sort of old order, including old values, is gone. And what we need is, in Nietzsche's view, it's not weakness or kindness, which he sees as sort of Judeo-Christian vestiges of this fake religion, but rather power and strength.
So this is the rise of the Übermensch.
Exactly, the Übermensch as the sort of ultimate natural aristocrat. And so the idea that some people are just better than others, and that if you are better, the way to sort of express that is to wield power over others. And the next best thing is maybe attaching yourself to someone who can sell you the fantasy of being a part of it. You can't be Mussolini. The next best thing is being a follower of Mussolini. And that's very powerful as a political force in the early 20th century in Europe, the same way as it becomes, in a very different way, very powerful as an economic force in America in the sort of heyday of advertising. If you're a normie, you failed. And that's true today as it ever was.
So this is why you call capitalist consumption in America, you call a warped mirror image of the fascist cult of personality. I don't think I'll ever pick up a copy of Vogue and look at it the same way.
I mean, I think that what unites these two seemingly disparate worldviews is a sense that there's sort of three kinds of people. There's the sheep who don't know they're sheep. There's the specials. And then there's the sheep who maybe would buy products that make them feel special.
I feel like there were early ads, I don't remember if they were for cold cream or what, that say things like, all around you, people are watching.
Oh, yeah. I think that's Woodbury's shaving cream, that one. Okay. Everyone is judging you. Everyone is watching you. There's one for like writing paper that's like, your friends are all judging you because you're not using the right writing paper. But my favorite ad from the 20s that I think gets at the heart of a lot of what we're talking about from around 1928, it's for a correspondence course called Personal Magnetism. The advertisement reads, you have it, everyone has it, but not one person in 1,000 knows how to use it. And that's a really interesting reframing of these tensions, hard work, innateness, authenticity, which is that everybody sort of has the capacity to unlock some inner power, but only people who want it badly enough and who are willing to buy this book or this correspondence course are going to be able to have the kind of it that it takes to get ahead, whether it's to become a then nascent Hollywood star or become a successful businessman, that it's about cultivating your innate you-ness by wanting it badly enough that makes you one of the specials.
Right. And so this is where I think we've arrived today at this particular place in our culture where the tension between authenticity and inauthenticity, reality and unreality, it's like the substrate we swim in. I mean, Donald Trump is the apotheosis of this, right? But I feel like this question about what's real and what's not real is just there everywhere today.
Absolutely. There's a deep nihilism in it that's only intensified by the fact that social media and the internet more broadly means that more and more of us live our lives in realms that do change depending on what we want. You know, the algorithm shows us different news headlines depending on what we click on, different advertisements depend on what we already like. That becomes the truth. It affects how people vote. It affects how policies get made. There becomes a sense that truth is what you make it. And whatever one might make of Donald Trump, he's very explicit about this. He's very influenced by Norman Vincent Peale, author of The Power of Positive Thinking, was his family pastor.
I did not know that until I read it in your book. I find that just astonishing. Yeah. He's in the direct lineage of New Thought.
Oh, absolutely. Norman Vincent Peale officiated, I believe it was his second wedding, Trump's second wedding. Trump's even written explicitly about this, spoken explicitly about this. Yeah, you know, it's what you do. You massage the truth a little bit. You say that you're a bazillionaire and then you become a bazillionaire because everybody, you know, gives you money to invest. That's how it works.
Right. What does he call it? Truthful hyperbole.
Truthful. Exactly. I mean, that's the idea that if you convince people of stuff, it becomes real.
And so I have always understood that about Donald Trump. I think most of us have. What I have struggled to understand are the authoritarian tendencies.
Yeah, I think he kind of combines imagery from the Nietzschean tradition of the Übermensch with this kind of P.T. Barnum humbug. Because if power is making people think stuff, true power is convincing people of things because that's how reality gets made, then he's one of the ones who, according to this logic, is one of the specials at the top of the heap. And so I see him very much as an inheritor of both of these traditions. He is not an anomaly in American culture at all.
So given this historical backdrop, what's your take on the influencer economy today?
It's the natural extension of the fact that we all have to build our own brands, that self-creation is not just something we do, with something that we sell, and that one of our jobs is not just to work hard and be virtuous and make middle-class money. Our job is to use everything at our disposal to create ourselves as brands, as commodities. And the influencer whose authentic lifestyle is an excuse to sell products is like the apotheosis of that. And I believe something like 80% of members of Generation Z in one poll said that they would be willing to post on social media for money. And actually, last week, I was teaching a college class on self-made to 18 to 22-year-olds, and I did quick show of hands. Pretty much everyone in the room said they would post SponCon for $1,000. It's even now gotten to the point where there was an article in The Atlantic a couple of years ago that people were pretending to be influencers when they weren't. They were pretending that things were sponsored content when they weren't because it was cool. They wanted their friends to think that they were someone who got brand deals. So they were pretending to be influencers saying, like, this is SponCon, when it wasn't.
So that's so interesting that it's not enough just to have an identity to, quote unquote, know who you are or have things that you like. Now it's fundamentally about selling. You're not a good enough person somehow if you're not selling yourself.
Absolutely, because you're not cultivating yourself. You're not making the most of what you have, like that personal magnetism ad from the 20s. You're not using the power you have. And that, I think, is very dangerous. I think fewer and fewer of us have a really robust conception of a private life because all of our lives are reimagined as content. And I do see, I live in New York City, and there's so many places, including like restaurants, bars, that very obviously exist for social media. You hear restaurants talking about how they don't focus on like the taste of the food anymore. What really matters is a really visually exciting meal that will play well on TikTok. The idea that experiences exist in order to create content rather than the other way around, to me, is very frightening.
It's interesting. I think everybody feels like they do have a private self, but now you're responsible for creating a narrated self. I guess going back to your idea that we are as gods, yeah, we've made a creation and now we're populating it with narrated versions of ourselves.
That's very unsettling. I do think sometimes that the only people who can be offline are the truly wealthy or the truly successful. I feel like I'll know I've made it when I don't have to have a smartphone. You know, when I'm fancy enough that I don't need to chase reviews, that I don't need to promote my book because I know it'll sell anyway, where I have a flip phone, my assistant will read my emails and call me on my flip phone. Like, yeah. I think that privacy and being offline are going to become luxury goods that the wealthiest and most successful among us can afford to have, and the rest of us can't. So maybe the next ethos of the specialness will be the people who unplug.
Who become invisible. Thank you so much. This was chilling and fascinating.
Oh, thank you. It was a delight.
Dara Isabella Burton is the author of Self-Made, Creating Our Identities from Da Vinci to Kardashian. Also check out her new novel, Here in Avalon.